I've had a long conversation with a colleague and a good friend of mine, also a designer. We were talking about getting the right approach to a design and finding the right problems. And it's a long road until you get to the point and to the right idea. And it's very, very messy. But at some point from that conversation, he just started shouting, "You gotta do the work. You gotta do the work. Otherwise, it's crap."
This reminds me of Mad Men. I think it was the second or third season. And Don, after being the big boss and the big thinker with the cigarette and the whiskey and just giving orders, he kind of had to start from scratch somehow. I don't remember the entire context. And he wasn't getting anywhere. And one of his colleagues, one of the senior guys, came to him and he said, "Don, you gotta do the work. You won't get anywhere if you're not doing the work." And that stuck with me. You can't just say, "Oh, I have this bunch of experience. Everything's going to fall in my lap."
We've been doing this how long? You with writing and me with design. And we still struggle. We still write crappy lines until we get to the right one.
Do or do not, there is no try. Hi, we are Sabina and Silviana. And today we're talking about the Yoda approach to writing with a very special guest. But first, thank you to our partner Cărturești, who is supporting this season. Cărturești is the meeting place for people who love reading. Go to cărturești.ro and find our dedicated shelf with books that we hope will inspire you to write more. Use AscultZest at checkout for a 20% discount. This podcast is also supported by our listeners. If you find our conversations useful, head over to patreon.com/zestpodcast. Supporter benefits include a written summary of every episode and participation in our monthly writing workshop. Thank you. Our guest today is journalist Jackie Banaszynski. Jackie Banaszynski is a reporter, writer, editor, and teacher. She was the winner of the Pulitzer Prize for Feature Writing in 1988 for a special report called AIDS in the Heartland. Till 2017, Jackie was the night chair in editing at the Missouri School of Journalism, and she is now an editor at Nieman Storyboard. One of her newsletters at the end of 2022 inspired the theme for this season of Zest, which is overcoming writer's block. We were happy and honored when Jackie accepted our invitation to talk about this topic, and we dove right into it. Is writer's block real, or is it just something we tell ourselves?
Well, given that most everybody claims they've had it, it's hard for me to say it's not real. It wasn't allowed in my life. It's still not. I write the newsletter every Friday. I've been doing that for 5 years. Nobody is saying, "Oh, if you're not feeling up to it this week, don't worry about it." I do think people, they do get stuck, to use your word. They don't know where to go next with the story. They lose confidence. They dread the thought of sitting down in a chair and just facing the screen, because it's not easy. I love what you said when we were first talking about wanting people to find more courage to write. And I think that's really important to think about, because writing isn't easy. It's work. It's like weeding your garden, right? It's like cleaning your house. It's work. But if you don't do the work, you're never going to do the writing. You know, what I think what really happens is that people wait. They think of writing as some sort of artistic venture where they're waiting for inspiration. They're waiting for the muse to visit. They're waiting for divine inspiration, as opposed to sitting down and putting words together and then looking at those words and realizing the words either work or the words suck. And then they got to keep going, right? So you don't, let's say you're scrubbing your kitchen floor, you don't wait for divine inspiration. Right? You're not waiting for the muse to say, "Oh, here's how you're going to scrub the perfect floor." You get down on your hands and knees and scrub the floor. And I think writing is much the same way. There's certainly a creative aspect to it, but it is the work. And so when people get stuck, I think they aren't recognizing what they need to do to get back on track to carry the work forward. So they're not recognizing and aware of their own writing process. The one exception is, I think that people sometimes reach, I don't know if the word is going to translate, fallow periods, If a farmer grows crops and one year he leaves the fields unplowed and unplanted, that's you're letting the field go fallow. You're just giving it a rest, right? And I have friends who have, like, during COVID, they weren't able to write. They just got kind of lost in their head. I've had friends who, after losing a loved one, let's say a spouse, they go through a period where they can't write. I've read stories of women who have children and after they give birth, they can't write because they're going through some sort of other emotional drain that's just taking all of their mental energy. Otherwise, I think you just have to sit down and do the work. Doesn't sound very sexy, does it?
No, especially when you, as you said, when you put down the words and they suck.
You know, my newsletter this past Friday was from, I work with a watercolor artist. Well, she's a landscape artist. And she is now 85. And she's been doing this very successfully for 65 years. And she was talking to us about her own process and journey. And she said, you know, some days everything I do is terrible. And some days I do stuff that's pretty good. This is somebody who's been doing this for 65 years. And she's still saying some days I can't paint very well. But she still paints. She paints every day. Writing's the same way. In my own writing workshop, one of the principles I put up on a board for people when I have this kind of list of beliefs about writing. And one of the things I put up there is that in order to write, you have to be willing to suck. You will suck all your life because there are days when it's just not going to be very good. And you just got to push through that.
Do you still feel like that some days?
Oh, yeah. 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 I don't come from a background where I've never written fiction. I don't write poetry. So I don't come from a background where I thought of myself as a writer, a capital W writer. My background is in journalism. Now, I wrote constantly. I still write constantly. But I recognize that the goal of my writing is usually to get the information right and to communicate it effectively. I'm not striving for grand elegance. And I think that that actually makes it more successful. One of my colleagues from the Poynter Institute, when I used to teach there in St. Petersburg, Florida, used to say that one of the ways to improve your writing is to lower your standards, which means don't try to make everything perfect. Just get words on the paper. Anne Lamott, the writer, the U.S. writer, she talks about writing a shitty first draft. It's like you just got to get stuff down on paper. And I think because I worked in the daily newspaper business most of my career, and I still do, you know, I'm not on deadline every day, but I might as well be. I think that that's just become part of my writing muscle is just like, okay, what do I have to say? I do have a process that I know and understand that I can think through to get to the point where I'm ready to sit down and write. But yeah, some days it's not very good. And I know when it's not very good. It's like, yeah, well, you know, I got it done. It's fine. I didn't embarrass anybody. I didn't embarrass myself. I didn't libel anybody. Nobody died. Hit the send button, move on, write again tomorrow. That's kind of my philosophy in a nutshell.
So is that your process or is it something different that you're talking about?
My process involves the steps that you have to take to get through to a finished story. There are like six of them. Some people say seven. And if you know what those steps are, you can assess which of those steps you're good at and which of those steps you avoid or you get stuck at and which of those steps you need help with. And because I've been doing this long enough, I know that about myself. And so in those places where I tend to either avoid writing or I get stuck, I know what to do to get through that.
Can you tell us the six or seven steps? It doesn't have to be a lecture if it's too long, but just an idea.
No, it is actually useful. I wish I had known this when I was younger because I probably wasn't introduced to this until I was well into my 30s, maybe close to 40. Think of it as construction. You're building something. And when you build something, whether it's a house or a table, let's say you're sewing a dress, you have to build it in steps, right? Or do it all at once. And you don't start at the end, you start at the beginning. And writing is the same way. So I think of writing as construction. I'm building something with ideas and words and sometimes images. But it's no different than my father building a table or the house I grew up in. So the first thing you have to have is an idea. The idea can be very vague, but you have to have an idea. You have an idea for your podcast. Your podcast wouldn't have started and wouldn't have sustained without this idea that we want to dive into the world of writing and show people that it's accessible and that they can do it. They can learn it. So you have to have an idea. Then you have to report out that idea. You have to gather information that serves that idea. That's the reporting part, research. Then you have to, after your reporting is done, you have to focus your idea. Then you have to take all of this stuff that's in your head and you have to sit down and say, well, now what are we going to do? So when you decide to do this episode of your podcast, you were very clear about saying you want to talk about Yoda writing. That is a focus. You didn't just say, oh, we're going to call up Jackie and talk about whatever she wants. You were like, this is what we want to talk about. Writer's block, Yoda writing. After you have a focus, then you can organize your material. You can figure out, okay, where do I start in my story? What do I include next? How do I get people through? Where do I end? And then finally, you revise. You go back and you polish it. That has to happen every time you write. Place I always got stuck was at the focus, which is where a lot of people get stuck. I'm not great at ideas, but I've trained myself and learned how to come up with ideas. And if I'm really lacking confidence, I have people I call and say, I'm thinking through writing about X. Do you think that's a good idea? Fine on the reporting. I like that part. It's the focus. It's then like, okay, what am I really trying to say here? And that's where I would get stuck. That's where I would get stalled. I'm going to let you in on a little secret. I don't like to write. I do not like to write. I find it very hard, lonely, uncomfortable work. And I am not confident of myself as a writer. I don't consider myself a very good writer. In order to write, I think what was making it worse for me for a long time was I didn't have focus and therefore I couldn't organize my material in my head. So I would just kind of try to bash through things. And it was not a very smart process. Now, because I know this about myself, I take those steps 3 and 4, focus and organizing, and I let myself do certain things that help me figure out what it is I'm trying to say and the order in which I'm trying to say it. So I have a very, very simple outlining process that I scratch things out. I don't start at the beginning of stories. I start somewhere in the middle so I get something written. For me, getting to that point where I'm ready to write involves very simple physical activity. Sweeping the floor, washing the dishes, pulling some weeds in the garden, making the bed, folding laundry. That is part of my kind of my brain settling down and going, okay, oh, that's it. And so those very simple physical tasks, which take no mental energy, allow my brain to kind of whirl over here. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, that's it. I got it. Now I'm ready. And then I sit down and write. And sometimes I have to sit down and write before I'm really ready because deadline is deadline.
Probably a lot of writers, journalists go through the process without knowing the steps. They just learn it as they go.
Right. As a result, what happens is they're not able, when they get stuck or when they need help, they're not able to go, oh, here's where I'm at in the process and here's the help I need and I'm going to get that help.
Mm-hmm. So that it's helpful to have them outline like that, maybe get some clarity. You said you don't enjoy writing, yet you built a career around it. So what motivated you? How do you stay motivated, build a career, to keep writing when you don't like it? Or what is it about writing that makes you keep doing it, even if you don't enjoy it some of the time?
Right. Well, again, I don't write fiction. I don't write poetry. I don't write just to write. So I don't keep a diary. And I'm not saying it's bad to keep a diary. I've tried keeping a diary or a journal. It doesn't work for me. I think I've done it twice in my life, and there were special circumstances. So I went into this world because I wanted to be a reporter. And what I recognize about all the writing I do, whether it's for work, paid work, whether it's writing letters to people, whether it's writing, I write a Christmas letter every year that I send out to, you know, maybe 100 people, whether it's writing a eulogy for somebody who's died. For me, writing is gathering information and then sharing it. So it's not a solo act. If I were left to my own devices and did not have some kind of audience, I probably wouldn't write much because I don't need to write for myself.
Mm-hmm. So it's the stories you want to tell.
Yeah, and it's having somebody at the other end receive those stories, whether I know who they are, whether they've read it or cared or not. I have to have an outlet for my work, which is why I think of myself more, Sabina, as a craftsman, a craft person, than I do as an artist. Because artists, I think, probably do their art whether or not anybody makes use of their art or appreciates it. It's something that drives them. I tend to be, I think, more practical. And what drives me is like, this is information I have. I think it has value and I want to share it with you. Or I write letters a lot and it's because I'm thinking about someone and I want them to know that. So I reach out and I send a letter or I write a lot of postcards. So I don't think of it as much as, oh, I'm going to sit down and write. I think of it as I'm going to communicate with somebody.
We make this difference between a reporter and a writer. And yourself, you don't identify necessarily as a writer, but more as a reporter and a craftsperson. And writing comes with the job. But do you think that if you're not a good writer, you can kill a story? And vice versa, if you're a good writer, you can save a story that's maybe not so great.
That's really an interesting question. I actually mostly think it's the opposite. I think if you have the right information, the right material, even if you're not a great writer, you can still make that story work well enough. If you're a really good writer, but you don't have anything to say, then you're just stringing pretty words together. When I moved into editing and then teaching, I found it much more effective to work with people who were willing to report and get the information and do the research than I did with people who walked in and they just fancied themselves really high-end writers, but they didn't have anything in their notebook to back up what they wanted to say. So you can get help with the writing. You know, I see stories all the time that could be better written. With some exceptions, you know, like if you read a piece that's full of cliches, or it's just, I'm working with a longtime former colleague of mine right now. She's doing a piece that involves her husband's death, and she's trying to write it for a magazine. And it's good, and it's going to be very good, but right now she's just got a little bit, she got too many cliches. It's a little bit too glib, but we'll get it there because she's got the material and I trust that she knows. So if I ask her a question or I say, hey, what if you did this, this, and this, she'd say, oh yeah, I've got that. I read two pieces recently in the paper I get here, the Seattle Times, one of the newspapers I get, and they were both fabulous, fabulous stories. They weren't executed really well. They were what I think of as missed opportunities. They could have been astonishing. They were good enough. They were good enough for what the writer, and they were both young writers and what they were trying to do. And so I was like, no, it's fine because they had really interesting information. And I read both of them all the way through because I wanted to know and understand this world that they had taken me into. But they weren't, you know, if I had been sitting next to them as an editor, I would have been pushing them harder to include information that they didn't include, to take me further into that world. I think of all writing, Sabina, as taking people into another world. You're a tour guide. And you are taking the people who read you into a world that they otherwise wouldn't go into. So right now, this conversation between you and I, you're taking your listeners into a world inside of my head, right? And inside of my experience. So the deeper you go into that world when you're reporting, the more you have to say when you finally sit down to write.
And you can't really describe that world for your audience if you don't know it. So maybe that here is where people get stuck sometimes. They don't do enough research. They don't know enough about their world as journalists or writers.
Right. You know, I can have... We have a bank, we have two banks that failed now in the United States. So there's all of this fear about bank failure and run on the banks and things. I have strong feelings about this because I worry about the economy, but I don't know anything about how banking systems work and how government regulations work. So if I sat down to write about it, I would simply be writing "this scares me" bullshit, right? I would have to report. I would have to figure out, well, what do I want to understand about the bank failures? And maybe I don't even need to understand how banking regulations work. Maybe I want to write about other people like me who are of an age, need their retirement income, you know, have holding on to what little they have. I would go and talk to several of them and say, how are you feeling about this? You know, do you feel your money safe? How do you keep your money secure? What do you worry about most? If your bank failed, what would you do? Would you be able to pay your bills? How big are your bills? What are they covering? Then I'd have something right. But without that level of reporting or research, you know, and it doesn't have to take long. You can do really, really good, interesting research for a story in 10 minutes. You know what you're going after and you know what to ask.
If you have the focus you're saying, right?
Yep.
I want to ask you about another type of writer's block. Generally speaking, that I think that can occur, and it has to do with motivation. And I'm going to bring in the story of a Romanian magazine you know well, the Câte Revistă, and their magnificent conference that unfortunately isn't happening anymore, The Power of Storytelling. It was a very loved publication by the Romanian public, and still it didn't make it. It had to close doors after 50 editions. How does a writer come back from something like that? How do they regain motivation? And have you had any sort of moment like that in your career where you had to start over and feel like the work you've done mattered, but it didn't matter enough or something didn't work? I think it's a very difficult moment for someone who loves writing and storytelling.
Yeah, that's a big question. I think mostly... I mean, any time a magazine like Dora fails or a newspaper in the United States closes, that's happening all the time. Or somebody, I work with a lot of freelancers now as an editor and coach. When some of them just sort of hit a wall, I guess that's a version of writer's block. They just are like, nah, they haven't done anything for a while. I think a lot of it comes down, even though it's a very complex matrix of reasons that happens, I think a lot of it comes down to money. If you can't support what you're doing, if, you know, the freelancers, if they can't sell their ideas and their pre-reported pitches, then why would they write? Because they need an income. Some of them, interestingly enough, don't write much because they don't need the income. They have a partner, a spouse who makes perfectly good money. I'm working with a woman occasionally who is married to, I don't know what he does for a living, but he makes good money. I think he's a doctor or something. So she doesn't push herself to write until she has an idea she really falls in love with. And I'm like, oh my God, how can you do that? If you reach the point where, as with Dore, it's happened to me a few times in my career, I've never lost a job. But I've had those moments where I've had to leave a position or change a position, or like when I left Missouri, then I was leaving a job. I had to find another outlet that would allow me to keep doing some version of what I knew how to do, but also allowed me to keep learning. To me, and I don't know if this is true for everyone, but for me, as long as I'm learning something, as long as I'm challenged, I will find a way to keep going. if the job just becomes, or the writing just becomes the same thing again and again and again and again and again, and there's no challenge, there's no surprise, there's no stretch, there's no growth, that's when I'd probably say, I'm done with this. Then I'd go learn how to, I don't know, fly an airplane or something. So I think part of it is money and what, you know, what you have to do. We have to pay bills. And for me, a lot of the motivation was I need a job. I take care of myself. So I had to, you know, make sure I had an income and a living, a viable living. The rest of it, though, comes from, and that's why, again, I love the reporting, because I'm always learning something. And now as an editor, when I'm editing Neiman's storyboard, it's not quite the same, but without fail, I will read something from a contributor, or I'll read a story I'm interested in having somebody pursue, and I'll be surprised by it. I'll, wow, this is cool. Look at this. Look at what this person can do. Look at how their ideas work. Look at how, and that's what keeps me going. I'm not bored. I think when you get bored, you're like, I'm done.
Bored or tired, probably.
Yeah. And, you know, we all get tired, and I think you have to take a break once in a while. But I think if you're bored, it makes tired. There's a movie, I can't remember what the movie is, but there was this line in a movie I heard years ago in which somebody said that they were the kind of tired you can't sleep away, which means it's like this existential tired. And I think boredom leads to existential tiredom.
You said you work as a writing coach, and you've taught a lot of young people, still do. What are some common challenges you see? What things keep repeating with people who come to you and people who you teach?
One of the biggest is that they don't do what it takes to figure out whether they have a good idea and how to make their idea good. I think of that as one of the steps of reporting. You have to do what I call pre-reporting or exploratory reporting. So you have a notion, you have an idea, but it's just a topic. It's not a story because you haven't tested it out in the right ways to figure out what could I make of this. So that's a really common one. They'll just say, I want to write about homelessness.
And?
And what about it? So that's a big one. And that all gets to, they don't know how to source. They don't know who to go talk to. They're afraid to talk to people. So they don't explore. You know, I said, I believe writing takes us into other worlds. It's an exploration. We should be explorers. And we just happen to be exploring the world we all share, right? So that's a big one. When they get the information, and this is true whether it's a young writer who's still fairly inexperienced or even a senior writer, structure is a huge, huge challenge. So a lot of the calls I get, they're like, I don't know where to go with it. And they lose kind of control of the information, and they really struggle with structure. How to get a reader through a story, because they know everything now after they've done all their reporting and it all makes sense to them. And they know what all of the different connections between all the information is. And so it's hard for them to pull back and just say, Sabina is going to read this story and she needs to know this, but she doesn't need to know these five other things that I found out. I don't need to dump my notebook on her. So that's a huge, huge challenge. And part of that is that section of a story, whether you call it the nut graph, the nut section, that pullout section fairly high in a story that sort of summarizes a story. That's really hard for people to do. Really, really hard. So those would be the big three, I think. You know, a lack of confidence is fairly common among most writers. You know, they get insecure about whether their story is any good and whether anybody's going to want to read it and whether they're making the right choices. And that's why it's, you know, always good to have somebody else. It doesn't have to be somebody who's an editor professionally. You can get help from anybody who's an intelligent, aware reader, and, you know, show them your work and they'll say, I got lost here. I got confused here. I got bored here. I was surprised here. I didn't know what was going on here. I needed this to know this sooner. Boom. Then you got an editor.
How do you know if you have a good idea? Does it come with experience, with instinct? I mean, you said you have a theme, then you focus it more. You have a topic, you focus it more. You do maybe a bit of research. How do you know it's a good one? You should run with it.
I'm going to have to think about that one. That is a really good question. Part of it depends on audience, who you're trying to reach. And so a good idea for one audience can be a nothing idea for another. So you really do have to think about who you're writing this for and why. Once that's kind of considered, though, then I think a good idea is one that it keeps you as the reporter writer, it keeps you engaged in the discovery. And if you talk about it or share it with a couple of other people, you kind of see them lean forward or light up, as opposed to just, you know, change the subject and start talking about like the last movie they saw. So you're looking for that feedback that's like, really, really, tell me more about that. Ideally, I think a good idea is one in which the people who read or hear your story will learn something. They'll either feel validated, like, oh yeah, that is how it feels. Or they'll learn something and they'll go, huh, I had no idea. So I would say those are the three elements. You have to have some reason to tell it to your particular audience. And that mostly changes how you focus your idea. You have to have that connection with even just a couple of people who they're like, they want to know more. You can tell they're paying attention when you talk about it. And then you are introducing readers to something in a way that helps them think about it in either deeper or newer ways.
So you still have to do a bit of field work to test it.
Yeah, I don't know how people, you know, even poets, you know, I said I don't write poetry and I don't. I've never studied it. I keep trying to read it and I think I don't slow down enough. They do a lot of field work. It looks different, but if you talk to certain poets, they pay really close attention to the world. That's how they can use all that incredible imagery that they use. It's like they look at a leaf on a tree and they see things I've never seen. They're paying really close attention, or they're paying really close attention to our emotional lives, to how we feel about things. Because, you know, some poets write about nature and others write about grief, let's say, and they pay acute attention. They read other things about the world they're exploring through their poetry all the time, whether it's depression or joy. And so I think they too are reporting. It just looks different. They're not running around necessarily asking somebody a lot of questions, but maybe their exploration is more of themselves. And so they're constantly reporting on themselves. So what am I seeing in this leaf? What does it remind me of? What are the veins in the leaf? What do they make me think of? What do they make me remember? How do they make me feel? So they're constantly, constantly working at it. I don't think you can write unless you report at some level and in some fashion.
Many writers I talked with on this podcast say that they take a lot of notes before they don't even know if they're going to use them, but they just write down constantly details they're seeing, pieces of dialogue, whether they write it down or just take a mental note.
Right.
But that's still part of the process.
Notes and pictures.
Yeah, you take.
I used to be a fairly decent photographer, but I'm not crazy about this kind of photography. But it's just so easy, right? I'm taking a walk and I see something that I like, I'll just snap a picture. And then later I'll go through my pictures and I'll see things I had forgotten I had noticed. Now, I'm not pursuing a story when I do this. But if I were thinking about writing a story about something, let's say I want to write something about the coming of spring, then if I were taking my walk, I'd be looking for little signs of spring and I'd be taking pictures and later I could look at them and something would occur to me. And everybody's got one of these and everybody's got a camera now and it's right there in their pocket.
It's a very simple connection that I also like to take photos while I walk on the street. Just I notice something and maybe I don't post it anywhere but I never connected it to writing. I don't know why.
Oh, images are, you know, even just when you reached out to me, you mentioned the notion and we talked about it early this morning when we were talking, the notion of a writing practice. You could pull a picture out of your phone. A really good writing practice would be to try to describe that picture in words without sending anybody the photo, or to remember that moment when you took that photo. I took a picture yesterday I was taking out the recycling. It was that sexy, right? And I took a picture of, I have a tree, a shrub in my backyard that the yard crew cut way, way back. But it has moss on it because it's been out there now for 22, 23 years. And it's wet in Seattle. So it had moss on it. It was just really pretty. And last night I was going through my photos and I saw it again. I had forgotten that I'd taken that picture. It's no big deal. So then last night I started to write a letter to an aunt of mine, dear, dear, dear woman whose husband just died. And she used to be a gardener. And so that photo will help me launch into a letter for her about spring coming to Seattle. And I'll probably get into, you know, how I hope she's finding some joy in spring, even though, you know, she's now alone and big changes in her life. So there's a writing exercise right there from one picture.
That's a great one and really simple for everyone to use.
Yeah.
People also always say, well, I don't know what to write about. And more experienced writers say, well, there's ideas everywhere, but for the unexperienced one, it's not that obvious. But I really love this idea with the pictures because we always keep the phone in our hand now. And
right. Pick a moment, pick a scene, pick a memory. I teach a week-long writing workshop twice a year. And we can't really go out and report much. And it's a nonfiction writing workshop. Because we can't go out and report, there's no time. We're only together for 4.5 days. I have people work a lot from their own life experience or memories. So I will say, okay, I want you to write about the room you're most comfortable in. Where's the room that feels like home to you, where you just everything about you relax? Go. And they write about it for 9-10 minutes, and they end up with these beautiful stories. I'll take them out into the desert or go sit on a lake shore, and I'll say, okay, I just want you to look at the lake for 20 minutes. They think I'm crazy. That's a long time to get water, right? And I'm like, no, I want you to look, and I want you to think about everything you see. Just take notes on everything you see and everything you remember and everything you feel. They come back with whole stories about their grandfather in childhood. It's like, oh my God, where'd that come from? Because they were looking at a lake, right? Another will come back with a story about their wedding day because the blue of the lake reminded them of a dress that, you know, their mother was wearing or something. So any of these things, just picking a moment and writing, if a writer is lost, even if they're working on a deeply reported story, I will say, pick a moment, just one moment that you remember from this reporting and just write that. Don't worry about the rest of the story yet. Just write that moment. And that gets you launched.
Talking about the writing practice, why is it important to do these writing exercises, even if maybe they don't connect to your work at that moment, I guess?
It's as simple as you just have to keep putting words on the page or words on the screen. It's a muscle like any other. And if you don't use it, that muscle atrophies. I have some back and spine and hip issues. And so it's been very, very painful for me to walk very far. And so I've gotten lazy. And I know when I then do go out and need to take a 2-mile walk, it's going to be really hard because I'm not doing it. And if I just went out every day and walked 15 minutes and then another 17 minutes and then 18 minutes, I'd be fine. And writing's the same way. Painting is the same way. Music is the same way. Sports. There's a story about Michael Jordan, the famous basketball player, that after everybody else was done with practice, and what I've read is that he would stay behind and shoot 1,000 free throws. Now, I don't know if it was really 1,000. That's kind of a lot. You'd think he'd be there all night. But even if it was 100, that means this guy's considered like one of the best basketball players who was ever born in the history of the universe. He practiced every night. He shot free throws every night. Musicians still play the scales. And writing is the same way. You have to keep working your fingers with that pen or on the keyboard. Otherwise, when you sit down to do it, you'll be really rusty. You know, when I started Neiman Storyboard, the editing job, not quite 5 years ago, it used to take me an agonizing 2 to 3 days to write the newsletter. Now I do it in 2 hours because I'm doing it all the time. That's why you just have to keep writing. Even if what you write doesn't go very far or isn't very good, you just have to keep writing.
Do you think you lose something in the process when you do something repetitive like this, like write a newsletter every week? I write a newsletter 2 times a week for publication. In the beginning, I was paying a lot more attention and taking more time, like you said. Now I do it a lot faster. But sometimes I'm wondering, am I doing it as well as in the beginning? Am I paying enough attention to the details, trying to get my best phrases out?
How does it feel? What do you think?
I think I've lost some quality to speed, but I think it's a compromise I need to make to keep going.
Right. Yeah, I feel the same way. My newsletter, it doesn't feel as fresh to me. And I can tell I've repeated some ideas. But, you know, then I don't know what's going to work and what isn't. So the one I wrote last Friday, I thought, well, you know, it was pretty easy. I just threw it out there. And I've gotten, people have been sending notes saying they loved it. So who knows? I think when, you know, you asked about motivation and what motivates us, and you put it in the frame of something pretty profound, like the end of a magazine, the end of a certain version of a dream. I think the bigger issue is, how do we stay motivated when, just as you describe, we get to the point where, you know, we just do it and we do it and we do it and we do it. So how do we keep up that motivation to try to do something fresh and new and different, as opposed to saying, well, I got it done and I'm moving on? That's a tougher one for me.
Maybe it gets back to what you said earlier, when it starts getting boring,
you
have to switch it up.
Right. You've got to think about it a different way, or take a risk. You know, if you're talking in your podcast and with people about finding the courage to write, I look at it two ways. One, it doesn't take much courage at all, because again, we're not landing fighter jets on an aircraft carrier in the middle of the ocean. We're not sticking our hands into somebody's chest to massage their heart and bring them back from life. We're not doing anything that should require courage in the big sense. But at the same time, I think that it's important to recognize that we have to find whatever it is in ourselves to take a risk, to try something new or different. Because if it doesn't work, you can always pull back to the traditional. But what if, I should try this sometime. What if you wrote your newsletter, or I wrote my newsletter, as a haiku? What if you wrote it as a tone poem? What if you wrote it with no adjectives? What if you wrote a scene and never really explained why you were writing the scene? So we have to find the courage to take risks once in a while. And if you take risks in small ways, it feels fresher and nothing bad happens.
I mentioned the Yoda approach to writing in the email, and I feel like we've been talking about it, and you mentioned it as well, but can you please just explain what the Yoda approach to writing is in the way you meant it?
There's a line in Star Wars, in the first Star Wars, where Luke Skywalker has been sent off to study with Yoda, Master Yoda, and Luke wants to become a Jedi Knight. So Yoda is having him do all kinds of things that, you know, like levitate, and at some point he's got to raise the jet from the little lake, the pond that it crashed in. And Luke is basically saying, I can't do it. I can't do it. And then finally, so Yoda pushes him some more, and Luke is like, well, I'll try. And that's when Yoda gets upset, and he said, do or do not. There is no try, which means if you're going to do it, do it. And if you're not going to do it, don't bother. I have always struggled with that, because I really believe a lot of life is about trying your best. You just do your best. But that's an interesting distinction between trying your best and doing your best. And in writing, because of how my career has played out, we didn't have a chance to try something. We had to write a story and send it out, write a story, send it out, write a story, send it out. So we were doing writing as opposed to trying writing. And I think that kept me going, even when I was writing stuff that was not good, because I then was writing the next thing and the next thing and the next thing until eventually I figured some things out. But I wasn't sitting down saying, well, I'll try to write a story, a good story about this, but if it doesn't work, I'll walk away. That might be why I believe so much in writing letters and postcards to people, because you're not worried about whether or not it's any good. You're just trying to say, hey, I was thinking about you, and here's what I'm doing today, or here's what spring looks like in Seattle, or here's what I read the other night and why I liked it, whatever. that is doing something. Writing is an action. It's not a thought. It includes thought, but ultimately it's an action. If you don't act as a piece of writing, you're not writing. It doesn't happen in your head. It happens on the screen or on paper.
Yeah, I think it's a great distinction between doing and trying.
Yeah, right. And it took me a long time to wrap my head around that, you know, do or do not, there is no try. And it's like, yeah, that is how life works. You gotta do it. And sometimes you don't do it very well, but at least you've done it. And that's been that then is practice for the next time you do it, and the next time you do it, you'll be better. And the next time you do it, you'll be better than that.
That's a great thought and takeaway, I think. Just one last short question. Because you said you like writing letters and postcards. It's not quite the same, but maybe it's kind of similar. If you could write a message on a bookmark that people take when they leave a library, what would you write on that bookmark?
That's a hard one. What would I write on a bookmark? This might be cheating a little bit because it's something I found myself saying a few years ago when everybody was first falling in love with analytics and metrics. And I'm not a big fan of analytics or metrics. And so I ended up saying to somebody at one point, there are no metrics that can measure the impact on the human heart. And stories are things that affect the human heart.
And especially, I don't think you can measure the effect it has in time.
No.
You can maybe measure something in the moment, but right. In the long run, you cannot know what that story will do to some people.
Yeah, and that's another interesting thing. You can't predict it. So, you know, the AIDS story that most people know me for, I wrote, it's been 36 years. People still read that story and talk about that story. It's old. There are other things that I wrote that I think were arguably better. 2 days later, nobody remembered them. You never know. So you throw it out there and then the universe does what it wants with them. You know, we're hardwired. That might be the other thing that if I were ever to write on a bookmark, humans have been telling stories since they first picked up ochre and wrote on the rocks in prehistoric time. And we're still going to be telling stories when we learn how to write on the stars. We have to have stories as human beings. And without them, I think we lose our humanness.
We hope that today's episode gave you more courage and tools to tell your story, or the story of those who inspire you. If you want to join a community of people who love writing, come to our monthly writing workshops that focus on the process. Go to patreon.com/zestpodcast for all the details. Our goal is to get you to write that ugly first draft. Because if we haven't said it enough already, there's no shortcut, you gotta do the work. I'm Sabina Varga, co-producer and host, and my teammate is Silviana Toader, co-producer and art director. We publish Zest every other Wednesday in your favorite app. Be sure to subscribe and rate the show so that others can discover us. Thank you for listening.